The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe lemor. Hashem said to Moshe to say, Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yichuli truma. Speak to the children of Israel, v'yichuli truma, that they shall take for me truma contributions, offerings. Me'ez kol ish asher yidvena liboy tiches trumasi. From every person whose heart wishes to contribute, tichu es trumasi, you shall take contributions from him. V'zeis ha'truma asher tichu me'itom. And this is the truma, these are the offerings which you shall take from them. Zov ha'chesev u'nechoshes, gold, silver, copper. Scheles v'argoman v'selah shoni v'sheish v'izim. These are various types of materials of wools. Scheles was a blue-green wool which was dyed with the blood of a halozen, which was a certain creature which either lived in the depths of the sea or the depths of the earth. Argoman was a wool which was dyed purple. V'selah shoni was a wool which was dyed scarlet. Sheish was a linen. Izim was goat's hair. Eris elim ma'adomim ve'eris tochoshim ve'atzei shitim. Skins of rams which were dyed red. Skins of a tachash, which was an animal which was created specifically for the needs of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary, and had a coat of many, many colors. A very beautiful coat. Ve'atzei shitim. And wood from shitim was a type of cedar tree. Shemen lamo'or, and incidentally a very, very fine wood. Shemen lamo'or, an oil for the lights. Besomim l'shemen ha'mishcho, types of perfumes for the oil which was used for anointing all of these vessels. And the kahanim, v'likteres ha'samim, an incense which was burnt on the altar. Avnei sheham, these are precious stones. Onyx stones, v'avnim luim, and other types of precious stones, ephod, which was used for the breastplate of the kohen gadol, the high priest, v'lachesh, which was used for the robe of the kohen gadol, v'lachesh, and then his breastplate. V'osu li migdosh, and you shall make for me a migdosh, a sanctuary, v'shochanti b'seichom, that I may dwell in it. Kechol asher ani mare eischo eistavnis ha-mishkon veistavnis kol kelo v'chein tasu. All in accordance to what I shall show you. The plans of the sanctuary, the plans of all of the vessels, so shall you do. This parsha tells us of the mitzvah of the Osuli Migdosh, that we are commanded to make a sanctuary for the Almighty. And this parsha begins one of many, which teaches us the detailed instructions of the sanctuary and its vessels, and then later about the sacrifices which took place. And this is a mitzvah asei, a positive commandment, one of the 613. And the Mishkan was, the Mishkan was built in the desert and went with Klal Yisrael for the 40 years in the desert, and then it was brought into Eretz Yisrael. Over the next period of several hundreds of years, it stopped in various places until finally it came to its final resting place in Yerushalayim, in which Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, made from the Mishkan the great Beis HaMikdosh, the temple, and the Har HaBayis, and the Temple Mount, of which one of the outer walls still remain today, which is known as the Kotel HaMaravi, the Western Wall. The ultimate purpose of the Mishkan is in this posuk Ches, Bo'osu li Migdosh, you shall make for me a sanctuary, v'shochanti b'seichom, that I may dwell amongst you. Targum states, "Ve'yabdun kodamai migdosho, make before me a sanctuary, va'ashre shchinte b'neihom, and I will bring my shchina, I will bring my presence amongst you. So the ultimate purpose of all of this was to bring Shekhinah, the presence of the Almighty, into Klal Yisrael, to make a home for the Almighty. It's interesting to note that first it states we also limigdosh, you shall make me a sanctuary, and then vishachamti b'seichom, and then I will dwell amongst you. In other words, if we want Shekhinah to dwell by us, then first we must act. We have to first build a sanctuary, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come and dwell amongst us. The Hashraza Shekhinah, this is the ultimate in Kedusha, sanctity. This is the ultimate in Baruch and blessings. Wherever the Almighty is, there is blessing. This is the ultimate in beauty, in contentment, in happiness. The Gemara tells us that through Shekhinah one finds Simcha. Only through Shekhinah will one find rejoicing. So this is the ultimate of all of the brachas. What does it mean to bring Shekhinah into Israel, or to bring Shekhinah into the world? What it means is to join two worlds. The Almighty, when He created the world, He created two worlds. An Olam HaTachtein and an Olam HaElyon. He created what the sages refer to as a lower world and an upper world. Or what we might call it, the physical world and the spiritual world. And this was in the world in general, and this also was in man in particular. Because we find that when the Almighty created man, it states, Ofer min ha'adoma, He made him from the dust of the earth, Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim, and He blew into his nostrils a living soul. So man was made from the physical world, and then he was given a soul, he was given a body from the physical world, and a soul from the spiritual world. So in man himself, there are two worlds. If these worlds are divided and are kept separate from each other, then there are two. A lower world and an upper world. Physical world and a spiritual world. If these two worlds are joined, then no longer are they two, but they're one. If one can bring the upper world into this world, or elevate this world into the upper world, and join it with Shekhinah, join it with the presence of the Almighty, then there are no longer two worlds. Or man is no longer a dual personality, but he is one. The source of this Achdus, the source, the power to be able to unite these two worlds, this we inherit from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov inherited powers from Avraham, and he inherited powers from Yitzchok. Thank you. And the sages tell us that these powers that he inherited, these specific powers, he took them all and he made them into one. And this is why he was called Ishtab. Ishtab means man of perfection. Nothing was lacking, nothing was incomplete. These two worlds, each one by itself is incomplete. Together they are perfect. Yaakov was Ish Tam, the man of perfection. Nothing was lacking, nothing was incomplete. There was no dual personality there, and there was no duplicity there. He was the perfect, upright person of perfection. Not like his brother Esav, where Esav, we know, was the man of imperfection, the man of duplicity. And he was what was referred to as the Baal Eilam Azer, the master of the physical world. The master of the physical world, divorced and devoid from the spiritual. And from Esav came Edom, the great empire of Edom, the great empire of Rome. And Yaakov fought against Esav. And he fought against the Sar Shel Esav. Torah relates how he fought against Esav's angel. And he became victorious. And when he became victorious, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a new name, Israel. Because he fought with angels, and for Sariso, he ruled, he was victorious. So Yaakov had two names. One name was Yaakov, one name was Israel. Yaakov, the Torah tells us, was because of his heel. When he was born, so he was holding on to the heel of Esav. So he was called Yaakov. This represents the lowest part of the physical man, the heel of the human being. Israel, this was the name he was given when he fought with angels. Kisorisoim Elohim, he fought with God and angels, and he ruled. This means that Yaakov's height went from the heel of the physical human being all the way into the heavens, equal to that of angels. This is how he united all of the powers of the world. Ish Tam, he was all encompassing, perfect, not lacking anything. From the heel to the physical human being, to the greatest heights in the heaven. And this was through what power? States Yaakov, Ish Tam, Yeshiva, Oli, dwelled in the tents of Torah. Through the power of the Torah, he took all of the worlds and made them into one. This power that he had and what he was to achieve, this was revealed to him in his dream. After he left his father's home, his mother's, then the Chazal tell us that he went to study in the Yeshiva of Shem and Ever for 14 years, and then from there he went on, he was fleeing from Esav, and then from there he went on to the house of Lavan to look for a wife. He slept in a place. The place happened to be the Mokam HaMikdash, the place where the Beis HaMikdash was to be built, in Yerushalayim. And he dreamed of a ladder. A ladder whose base was on the ground and whose head of the ladder reached into the heavens. Malachi Hashem, the angels of God, they were going up and down. What was revealed to Yaakov, that the earth and the heavens, he was to be machaber, he was to bring together as one. Just as a ladder bridges two separate places, he would bridge these two worlds. And angels would be going up and down. There would be no separation between the two. When he woke up and he realized what took place, and he said, "Manora hamokem hazeh," that this place is such a fearful and beautiful, wonderful place. Ein zekim beis elokim bezeh shara shomai. This is the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will build his home, and this is the gates. These are the gates to heaven. What is meant? These are the gates to heaven. So Rashi brings Beis HaMikdash Shel Malo Mechuvin LeBeis HaMikdash Shel Mato. Just like there is a Beis HaMikdash, a sanctuary in this world, there's a sanctuary, a spiritual sanctuary in the upper worlds. And just like there's a place where the Beis HaMikdash shall be put here, there's a specific place for the spiritual sanctuary in the heavens. And the spiritual place of the sanctuary in the heavens is directly over the Beis HaMikdash Lamato, the place of our Beis HaMikdash here. And therefore that is the gates to the heaven. Zeh Shar HaShomayim, these are the gates to the heaven. Beis HaMikdash Shel Malo Mechuvin LeBeis HaMikdash Shel Mato. And this means that that's the place where the two worlds come together. Where he saw the ladder and where he slept, it wasn't merely coincidental, but in that place was the ladder between the two worlds. Because the Gemara tells us that in the Beis HaMikdash you have one section after another that becomes more Kodesh, more sanctified, until finally you come to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the Holy of Holies, the most sanctified part of the Beis HaMikdash. There you have the Oren HaKodesh, the Ark where the Sefer Torah and the tablets are kept, and that Ark is placed upon a spread of is placed upon a particular place where there's a great stone. That stone is called Evan Shesio. The sages tell us, why is it called Evan Shesio? Shemishom Shoso HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esa Olam. Shesio comes from the word Shesi, which means to weave. From that stone, the Almighty wove the world. He started with one stone and he wove around it. So this means that right there was the beginning of the world. And that is the joining place to the Beis HaMikdash Shel Malo, to the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the spiritual Beis HaMikdash, which overlooks it. With this, perhaps we can gain a little more light into what something else the sages tell us. When the Almighty created man, he took dust from the earth. Where did he take that dust from? Which part of the earth? One opinion is he took it from the place of the Beis HaMikdash, from the place where the altar was to be. The sages say the reason is order mimokem kaporosei nivro, in order that man should be created from a place that will bring atonement to him, because the altar brought atonement, kapora. Could be perhaps another reason, because if here was the beginning of the world, And this means this was the first point in the world that was joined with the spiritual world. So therefore the Almighty wanted to create man specifically dafke from there, because he had to have such a body that could also join with the spiritual world, with the neshama. He was going to make a physical body and blow into his nostrils a soul. And it had to come together. Therefore, he was made from that place. The Gemara tells us in Peragina Noshim, Mesech Techuli, that the Beis Hamikdash, the sanctuary, was given three names. Avraham called it a har, a mountain. Behar Hashem Yiroya, because when Avraham went to sacrifice Yitzchok to Har HaMoriah, this is where he went. And he called it a mountain. Yitzchok called it a sode, a field. When Eliezer brought Rivka to Yitzchok for a wife, it states that Yitzchok Vayetze is Yitzchok Losuach Basode, he went into the field and he was davening. That was the field of the Beis HaMikdash, where the Beis HaMikdash, where the temple was to be built. So he called it a field. Yaakov called it a bais, a home, a house. As it states in the episode with the ladder, Ein Zekim Beis Elokim. This is the house of Hashem. So it was given three names, a mountain, a field, and a home. The Almighty ultimately called it a home. Zebesi, this is my home. Not like Avraham that called it a mountain, and not like Yitzchok that called it a field, but like Yaakov that called it a home. He chose Yaakov's name. This is what the Gemara tells us. What is meant by that? What is meant as follows. The whole purpose of building a Beis HaMikdash, what do we need it for? Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, has a home. Beis HaMikdash Shel Malo. He has the spiritual Beis HaMikdash, which is in the heavens. The whole purpose of the Osuli Mikdash, that you shall make a Mikdash for me, you shall make a sanctuary for me, is Vishochanti B'Seichom, so I shall have a home on this world also. That I shall come and dwell amongst you. I didn't build this world that I should remain in the heavens. I built this world so I may dwell amongst you. But that is not so simple. That means that the world has to be elevated where the Almighty can dwell. That means that the Almighty has to be brought down into this world. Has to be something he can identify with. You have to join the two worlds before you fulfill that. Abraham started this process. He started the process, and the Almighty found a place in this world. But where was it? It was on Har HaMoriah. It was at the same place, but it was called a mountain. A mountain is remote from this world. It's in this world, but it's a very barren, remote place. Yitzchak built on the foundations of his father, and he worked on elevating himself even higher, elevating the world with him even higher. And he brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu deeper into this creation. When no longer HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwelled in the degree of a mountain, it was called a field. So when Yitzchok went there, it was called Vayetze Yitzchok Lasuach Basode. It was a field. A field is not as remote as a mountain. A mountain is barren. People do nothing on mountains. A field is part of civilization. You work it, you plant. But it's still not the yishuv. It's still not the heart of civilization. Yaakov called the Beis HaMikdash Bais. The Beis Elokim, it is the home of the Almighty. Because he had achieved in making it into a home for him. He had achieved the Vishachanti B'Seicham, that I may dwell amongst you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that I will not call it a mountain like Avraham or a field like Yitzchok, but a home like Yaakov. Zeh Beisi, this is my home. And this is the reason we find that when the sanctuary was built, many generations after Yaakov Avinu, because Yaakov came down with the first 70 people, and this was now at another time altogether. This was a good few hundred years later, when the Mishkan, the sanctuary, was built. Yaakov was already dead. We find he still played an integral role in the building of the Mishkan. How? Because when Klal Yisrael were in the desert, the Almighty said, you must have atzei shittim, you must have cedar wood to build the walls of the Mishkan. The basic structure which held the Mishkan together were huge beams of cedar wood. And this formed the entire structure of the Mishkan. Now the question is a question. They're in a desert. This is the desert of Sinai, a barren desert. Where are they going to get cedar wood? So they had cedar wood with them. Because when Yaakov left Eretz Yisrael several hundred years before Canaan, Tzofa Beruach HaKodesh, he saw through prophecy that this will all come about. They will go down to Egypt. They will be enslaved in Egypt. They will be set free. They will come to a desert and they will be called on to build a Mishkan, a sanctuary, and they will need cedar wood. So he took young saplings with him from Eretz Yisrael down to Egypt. And he planted them in Egypt. And he commanded his children that when you go out of Egypt, cut down these trees. By that time there'll be great cedar wood. Cut them down and take them with you, because you'll need them in the desert. So the crossing, the beams, came from Yaakov Avinu. Not the other articles, but the beams. Then there's another statement from the sages. The beams which formed the structure, the basic structure, the spine of the Mishkan, what helped to hold them together, but there was another beam that went, there were various beams that held these big, large wood together, but there was another beam that went through the inside of each of these beams and held each side as one. And this was called the Briah HaTichon. The sages say the Briah HaTichon, and this represented Yaakov Avinu. This represented Jacob. What does this all mean? Because the Mishkan had to be echot, it was one. Not only did it have to be one, it was making one out of two worlds. And the only one that had the power to do that was Yaakov. And the structure which made it one were these beams and this Briah HaTichon, this latch that went all the way around. Therefore that came and represented Yaakov Avinu. A few weeks ago we gave a shiur in regards to Shabbos. It was Parshas Yisro then, and one of the Ten Commandments was Shabbos. There we mentioned that Shabbos, the seventh day, is the link also between the two worlds, between the physical world and the spiritual world. The Medrash brings that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the entire world in the first 6 days, he looked at his world and he said, it's a beautiful, beautiful world, but something is lacking. So one opinion was, he said it was like a king that made a chuppah, a beautiful home, a beautiful palace. He painted it and ornamented it, and it was perfect, but something was lacking. Chosar kalo. It was lacking a color. There was no woman to put into the house. So therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shabbos, which became the color. And another opinion was, it was like a king that commissioned a beautiful ring to be made. And it was made, but he said something was lacking. It was lacking his royal signet. Same with the Almighty, he created a beautiful world, but it was lacking his royal signet, so he created Shabbos. So we explain them. If you have a beautiful home, or a palace, but there is no color, there is no wife, so the house is empty and there is nothing to bring the king into the house, why should he live in that home more than any other home? But if there he places his color, then that becomes his home. So with the Almighty, made the beautiful creation in the 6 days, but why should he come to this world? What is to bring him to this world? So he created Shabbos. Shabbos brought him to the world. Or the example of the ring. A king makes a beautiful ring, no matter how valuable it is, but what makes it into the royal ring? There are many rings. Only his signet. His royal signet. This is what identifies it with only the king. Same, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, but where was the royal emblem into the world? This was Shabbos. So we explained what the sages meant. This is from the Maral. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, was interested in attaching himself to the world and the world to himself. If it would be merely a secular world, a world without sanctity, then there would be no identification to it for him. Just like a king has no identification with a home if his wife is not there, if his queen is not there, or no identification to a ring, no matter how valuable it might be, if his royal signet is not there. Now Shabbos, what Shabbos does, the Beis HaMikdash did. Except Shabbos did it in the concept of time. The Beis HaMikdash did this in the concept of space. Shabbos, the sages refer to as Kedushas HaZman. It's the concept of time. By adding an additional dimension of time into the world, and a higher dimension of time, the seventh day, the two worlds join each other. In the concept of space, Kedushas HaMokom, sanctity of space, by bringing a specific place which will be elevated more from the rest of the world, the place where the Mishkan was, or Yerushalayim, and the Mokom HaMikdash, the place of the Beis HaMikdash, which was elevated from the rest of the world. This becomes the bridging point between the two worlds. So similar to what we learned about Shabbos, that's the link between the two worlds in the concept of time, the Beis HaMikdash is the link of the two worlds in the concept of space. Now, as we mentioned, all bracha and all sanctity And all perfection comes through joining of these two worlds. If these two worlds are not made into one, but one is divorced from the other, then we have Khurban, then we have destruction. Then the physical world goes down into the depths of an endless abyss, becomes void of all beauty, of all meaning, of all sanctity, of all perfection, until finally you have great Khurban, great destruction, and Rahman al-Itzlan, great Tzoris rubbish, many, many Tzoris, many pains and agonies and troubles. Now, as we mentioned, it states, V'osru li migdosh v'shochanti b'seichom. You shall make for me a sanctuary in accordance to what I have commanded you, and I will come and dwell amongst you. First you must make, and then I will dwell amongst you. The Almighty does not come by Himself into this world, or this world does not elevate itself by itself to the Almighty. This task, this job was given to man. Do not make an error to think that the Almighty will come down here by Himself, or the world or you will be elevated by yourself. It will not be joined by itself. This task was given to man. When will it be v'shochanti b'seichom, that I will dwell amongst you, I will dwell in you? That's the also the English, when you will do. If you will do, then I will follow. But if not, then these two worlds are divorced from each other and they head in opposite directions until destruction. This is the basic principle of Torah and mitzvahs, where we were given Torah and mitzvahs to do. And then from there comes great hatzlocha, great success. This the sages tell us in many, many places. I'll cite a few. For example, it states, Kol misha mekachin esei lamato, mekachin esei lamalo. Whoever sanctifies himself in this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will sanctify him from the upper world. But first he must sanctify himself here. Another statement, Habol Letaher, Messiah Nesoy. Whoever comes to do good, the Almighty will help him. The Almighty doesn't help him to do good. It states, whoever comes to do good, Habol Letaher, person comes to do good, a person comes to achieve, a person comes to better himself, then the Almighty will help. But if he doesn't come, then the Almighty will not help him reach his goal. And to the converse, abolatame, if a person comes to do bad, no one will stand in his way. No one will stand in his way. Another statement from the Chazal. This Dovra Melech said, Harchev pihu v'amalehu. Open his mouth and I will fill it up. A person wants the closeness of the Almighty. He wants the spirit of Hashem. Then he has to open his mouth. If he opens his mouth, then the Almighty will fill his spirit into him. But first he must open his mouth. That means the first act must be his. He must initiate. And then the Almighty will fill it. Harchev pihu v'amalehu. Open his mouth and I will fill it. And this the Chazal say, tell us, Pishu li pesach ke machat, v'ani eftach lecho pesach ke ulam. If you will open yourselves, if you will open your mouths, you will open your hearts, as wide as the opening of a needle. That's all the Almighty asks. If you will open your mouths, open your hearts as wide as the opening of a needle, then I will make that opening as great as the ulam, the great hall, which entered into the sanctuary, which was a very, very great hall, a great entrance. So all the person has to do is make a beginning which is as large as a needle. But that he must do. If not, then the Almighty will not open him up at all. And this was Avraham and Yitzchok and Yaakov. They worked and they toiled and they labored. And whatever they did, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did twice as much. If they did two measures, the Almighty did four. If they did four measures, the Almighty did eight. If they did eight, the Almighty did 16. And this is how they became so great. But it all came. What was the difference between them and the ones that preceded them? 20 generations preceded Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. What was the difference? The difference was because they, the others, did not do. While Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov did. That's why it states in our parsha, says, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'yichu li truma me'ez kol isha she'yidvenu liboy, tichu es trumosi. Speak to the children of Israel and take from them offerings. From every man whose heart inspires him to contribute, take es trumosi, take offerings. Now there were, the sages tell us we're speaking about three different types of offerings. One type was given in accordance to each person what he wanted to give. The two other types were set amounts which everyone had to give. Everyone. Now what did the Almighty need all of this from the people for? If he wanted to build himself a home, a sanctuary, so what did he need? Their gold, their silver, their copper, their wools. States, Li HaKesev and Li HaZov. Kodesh Baruch Hu says that silver and gold belongs to me. He has plenty of wealth. So what did he need from the people for? So the answer is because the people had to make the Mishkan. The people had to do. It had to be made b'mamon Yisrael. It had to be made from gold and silver and wealth of Yisrael. Not of the nations, but of Yisrael. And it had to be made from mamon bailim. It had to be their money. A person brings a korban, a sacrifice, it must be his. Because he has to be personally involved through himself, through his acts, through his wealth. And therefore the first step was you bring your contributions. And that will be the foundation of the Mishkan. And that's why by every Dvar Mitzvah, when it comes to doing a Mitzvah, wealth of Israel must be involved. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't need the wealth. We need it. If the Almighty makes it, it's His. It's not yours. If you want to be involved, if you want to participate, then it has to be yours. Therefore, Tichu es Truvosi. That each one must give. And when it came to the Adonim were the silver base of the beams. Everyone had to give a half a shekel of silver, and each one the same amount, which all added up perfectly to all of the bases of the crushing. Because since the beams are what held the Mishkan together and made them into one, and everyone had to be participated. Everyone had to be represented. And everyone, the Almighty wanted to be represented equally. One should not give more than the other. So each one gave a maksis ha-shekel. And that was the foundation. And from there you could build further to Shekhinah. So a person must realize, he wants Shekhinah, he wants greatness. We always talk about it. You want an elevation. The foundation must be yours. You must lay the foundation. With your acts, with your mind, with your money. Therefore, the first sivui, the first command in the Mishkan was, speak to Israel, me'es kol ish, from every man. Tichu es trumosi, they should come with their offerings. We're now learning in the yeshiva about the mitzvah of Netilas Yadayim. The mitzvah that one is obligated to wash his hands before one eats. And from this principle, we can shed more light on what we're speaking here this evening. The Gemara brings in Masechet Brachos. Tesis brings it in Arsugya and Perikola Bosser. In Brachos Nun Gimel on the days, that the sages that enacted the Tilas Yadayim, that one must wash his hands before eating, and with a tremendous amount of halachos, literally hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of laws regarding to this mitzvah, they learn it from a posuk that states, Vizkadishtem. Vizkadishtem elu mayim rishonim. You shall sanctify yourself. This will be mayim rishonim. This is the first mayim. Now, the question is asked from the word Vizkadishtem, that you shall sanctify yourself. Where do we learn out from there a mitzvah that you should wash your hands before eating? What does that have to do with washing one's hands? You should sanctify yourself. That could be in 100 ways. Why? Before you eat. So the Maral explains in his Nesiva Avoda. The Gemara says as follows. Kola eichel lechem belei netilo kilo boal ishezerno. Whoever eats bread without netilas yadayim, without washing his hands properly, this can be compared to someone who takes a woman without marriage and lives with her. Kilo bal ish zeina. So what do we see? We see that the netilas yadayim, the washing of the hands before eating, is to be compared with a maisi kedusha. When you take a woman and you're makadish her, you give her, sanctify her with a proper marriage. Because without the netila, without the washing of the hands, the Gemara says it's the same as taking a woman and living with her without a proper marriage. What's the explanation? There are certain acts that a person performs basically with his mind. Thinking, creativity, mental acts. There are other acts that a person performs with his heart and emotions, emotional acts. There are acts that we could call spiritual acts that a person performs with his spirit. And there are acts which a person performs with his body, basically physical acts. Popular thought that if a person performs something with his mind, this is a lofty act. If it's with the spirit, for sure it's a very lofty act. If he performs something which is with his body, this is a very physical act. It's a lowly act. Achille eating, animals eat, drinking, animals drink, marital relationships. This is a physical act. The truth of the matter is, there is no such thing as a lowly act if it's performed in the way that the Almighty has commanded us to perform it. Because man is not an animal. Contrary to certain scientific theories, man is not an animal, the Torah tells us. Man is a giant. Tzelem Elokim, he was created in the image of the Almighty, he's a king. Man is the Melech HaTachta, the Olam HaTachta, the king of this world. He walks upright like a king, and all animal life bows down to him. And there is nothing that man performs, when he performs it properly, that does not span the all of the worlds. But since when man becomes involved in something which draws more from his physical powers than from other powers, there is the danger that he will fall into the depths of the physical world. Therefore, this is a danger point. And therefore, when man approaches acts which draw more from the physical powers of him, he has to be careful. And he needs careful preparation and careful sanctity and elevation. The ultimate spans all of the worlds. But he must be very careful in its performance. Otherwise, he'll fall into the low physical level, divorced from all other worlds. Therefore, when the Chazal, when the Torah told us, "Vizkadishtem," you shall sanctify yourselves. The sages learned that this refers, in particular, you must sanctify yourselves before doing an act which is basically physical. If we do an act which is basically spiritual, does not call upon such sanctification prior to it, because basically it's a sanctified act. If you're taking a lulav or a shofar, or if you're learning Torah, we must also sanctify that, but does not call upon us for such preparation and sanctity. But if we're going to do something which is basically physical, then this will require greater preparation and greater sanctity to bring it to the level where it should be. Therefore, the sages learned when it stated, "Vizkadishtem," you shall sanctify yourself, "Elu mayim rishonim." This refers to eating and drinking. Since an animal also eats and drinks, man might think when he eats and drinks, it's the same as an animal. He eats with a lust. He eats only because he's hungry. He eats only what he desires. The Torah said, no, when a man eats and drinks, that's the greatest mitzvahs. That can become as high as the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, vizkadishtem, sanctify your achila v'shtiyah. Sanctify your eating and drinking. And from here the sages learned, elu mayim harishonim. This means when you come to the table, you don't come like an animal. An animal, you put food in front of him, he eats it, finished. A man comes to the table. First, he has to prepare himself. He has to wash his hands. He has to wash them properly in accordance to all the laws of the mitzvahs. He has to eat with all of the brachas. He has to bench, and so forth and so on. Now the achila is a different achila. The eating is a different eating. The drinking is a different drinking. The Mishnah tells us that someone who eats at a table and there's no divrei Torah, there's no Torah at that table, there's no mitzvahs at that table. That's the same as bringing an animal. You slaughtered an animal to eat. It's the same as slaughtering an animal to an idol. Because it's purely physical. But if you eat at a table, and yesh Torah b'neihem, there's Torah at the table, shchina shruya b'neihem, the Almighty's at that table. Not like the world thinks that eating and drinking is always physical. If it was always physical, what's the Almighty doing at that table? You eat at a table, and there's divrei Torah b'neihem, there's discussion of Torah, state shchina shruya b'neihem, the Almighty's there with you. Rashi brings in Parshas Yisro, Vayikach Yisroi, this is in Yud Ches, Posuk Yud Beis, Vayikach Yisroi, Chesin Meisha, Eilis Vokim Lelekim, Vayova Arim, Vahozikni Yisrael, Echol Lechem, Im Chesin Meisha Lifnei Alekim. Yisro came to visit Moshe, so Moshe was Machnis Eir, his father-in-law came, a great guest. So he invited him to eat. So it states that if Moshe invited Yisro to eat, others wanted to be there also. So Aaron was there, and all of this Akedim, the 70 elders were there. So they made a big banquet with lavish foods. So it states that Yisro and all of the elders came to eat bread. Aaron and the elders came to eat bread with Yisro, Lifnei Elokim, before God. So sages say, what does it mean before God? They came to eat bread. What does it mean before God? Lifnei Elokim. So Rashi brings the Gemara in Brochus. Chov Dalet, the Gemara says, Mikan she nene misudu shel talmide chachom me mesubim bo, ki ilu nene miziv ashkino. From here we learn that when you eat at a table, you eat bread at a table, where there's Talmidei Chachomim, sages of Torah present, that's eating before God. That's the same as Nene Miziva Shchina, the same as eating in the presence of the Almighty. But we're speaking here about eating, drinking. We're not speaking about davening. We're not speaking about learning. Doesn't say that they said Torah. It wasn't a shir. From here we learn Lifnei Elokim. If Moshe was there and Aaron was there and the 70 Zakenim were there, their eating was before Hashem, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there also. So the sages tell us, don't make that error to think that just because an animal eats or drinks, and you eat or drink, it's the same eating and drinking, heaven forbid. When you eat and drink, and if it's done properly, the Almighty is there. It's the greatest mitzvahs. Mara says, Shulchan Mechaper. That during the time of the Beis Hamikdash, a person, the altar gave atonement. Not during the time of the Beis Hamikdash, a person's table gives atonement. The mitzvahs that he does with his table. Tremendous mitzvahs can be done with the table. There was once, there's a minig, it's brought in the Peskim, there was a minig by, I forgot where, an old custom in a certain area. Where was it? In Sorfas, in France, where it was the custom that a person, it was a schus, that a person's oren, a person's casket, which he was buried in, should be made from the wood of his table. That was a great schus. So all of the mitzvahs that he did on his table would go with him into the next world and would stand by him. The mitzvahs of eating and drinking, and Achnosis Orchim, bringing guests to the table and bringing poor people to the table. Now, if Achila Vishtia, eating and drinking, is something that's very worldly, what's he bringing into the next world for? Something he has to leave with this world. The same thing when it comes to marrying a woman. Not like the nations of the world think that marriage is something that is very worldly, very earthly, perhaps is necessary. That's why you have amongst the nations of the world
that you have if it's a super level person, super religious, they don't get married. Because they're beyond it, it's because this is something which is very earthly. And they're higher than that. So that was a concept of the nations of the world. It's not Israel. If marriage is performed, if marital relationships, if physical relationships are performed at a physical level, like we see in the physical world today, then there's no difference. There's no difference between man and animal. But if they're performed properly, not it's something that becomes permissible or it's something that becomes necessary, but it's something that reaches the highest sanctity of the world. And that's why we have what's called Kiddushin. It's called Kiddushin because it creates sanctity. And it states that a man's home is like the Mishkan, is like the sanctuary. How does a man's home become the sanctuary? So that's what the Gemara means to tell us now. It says, Kola eichel lechem belei netilo. Whoever eats bread without proper preparation, without proper preparation of the mitzvahs beforehand, without the proper washing of his hands, kilo bol ishus, it's the same as taking a woman without marriage. He takes an act which the Almighty made and gave it the highest forces of sanctity and kedusha, and he reduces it and deflates it to a mere earthly function. And this is why when it states Vizkadishtem, you shall sanctify yourself, these Chazal, the sages saw that especially the physical acts, those are the ones which need the extra kedusha. Unfortunately, in our generation, the generation that we live in today, this principle has been totally forgotten. Because of various interests of money, or interests of those segments that want to free themselves from any moral discipline, they have misled and enticed a generation, this generation and the last generation of young people, to the point of total destruction. They have led them into an empty, dead-end world, which becomes an abyss of misery. They have taught them that the physical world is divorced from the spiritual world. There's no achdus, there's no oneness. This world can be treated as something entirely remote and divorced. And in place of sanctity, in place of brocha, they have brought curses to them. We take an example. Wine was given to man for wonderful brochas. We use wine for celebration. We use wine for mitzvahs. They taught the world alcoholism, shikras, where it becomes a dangerous problem. When it comes to eating and drinking, which was given to man to strengthen himself, to bring health to himself, to bring joy to himself, today They bring chaloim roim, serious diseases are brought upon man because of his habits of eating and drinking, or even further, habits of drugs. Instead of sanctity of a house, of a wife, of a family, of children, the generation was taught of adulteries, of unfaithfulness, of incest, of total destruction and decay of one's house, of homosexuality, of plagues of AIDS. Instead of all of the brachas which human life is to bring, we have taught a generation shfichas domim, murder, bloodshed, violence, suicide, mental, emotional breakdowns. This, very concisely, is the world that we live in today. And nobody opens their mouth about it. Nobody says anything. Governments don't say anything. They can't, because of vested interests. It's too much vested interests in this. You got food companies, you got drug companies, you have tobacco companies, you have movie industries, you have television industries, holiday industries. Took America, after it was proven to the satisfaction of the highest level of governments that tobacco is dangerous, it took them still another 2 decades to be able to put an advertisement on the package of cigarettes that is dangerous because of vested interest. The academic centers of the world, which are supposed to be the lights of the world, universities, Khalila, heaven forbid that they should say anything. Not only they don't say anything, not only do they tolerate the situation, but they even endorse the situations under all type of lies and falsehoods. They give a name such as civil liberties or social justice or progress or freedom of expression or freedom of the arts. But meanwhile, they have sold 2 generations to total disaster. Each one, because of his own motivations, the so-called leaders of the world, are silent. While suicide and destruction is being committed right in front of us. And this is what the Torah is telling us. This world, divorced from the spiritual world, is a very olam hashofel. It's a very lowly world. It's a very ugly world. Hollywood tries to give some glamour into it for the sake of billions of dollars, so they can market their industry. But if you look behind the veneer, you'll see the human misery behind it. Divorced from the spiritual world, it's what is known as a lebedik gehenim. Say, all of the bitterness and destruction of gehenim. And this was Esav. Hinei anochi lomus. I'm going to die. What do I need anything else for? It's a dead-end road. If it becomes united with the spiritual world, then it's a beautiful world. It's the world the Almighty created, and every part of it is beautiful. Heaven forbid to say that one area of the physical world is not beautiful, when the Almighty in the 6 days of Bereshis every day said that he saw how good it was. And on one day when he did not say that, see, he made up for it the next day by saying it twice. And at the end of the 6 days of creation, it says he saw Kolma, everything that he made, everything. And he saw how good and beautiful it was, because he created the two worlds to be together. And this is the mitzvah of the Mishkan. Ve'osuli Mishkan v'shochanti, ve'osuli Mikdosh v'shochanti b'seichom. Make for me a sanctuary, so this world should not become divorced from the higher worlds, should not be lost and fall, so I may come and dwell in this world. You must make it. I will not come on my own. If you make it, if you fulfill, if you do your part with Torah and mitzvahs, then I will come and dwell amongst you. This is the mitzvah of Mishkan, and this came from the power of the Oves, and in particular Yaakov Avinu. And this is the secret of the Jew. The Jew always knew what wine was. To him it wasn't something wicked. And he always knew what food was. And he always knew what marriage was. The power of Kedusha to sanctify. Sanctify everything in this world that the Almighty has given us. We should be zeicher to fulfill these mitzvahs. In theory, we can fulfill them now. And in practice, when again we have the opportunity to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash when the Mashiach comes, b'mehera b'yameinu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.